Welcome to the Federation of Jewish Men's Clubs, or as we are more commonly known, FJMC's Health and Wealth Podcast, which provides you, the Jewish man, useful information about health and wealth issues which might impact your life. I will tell you a little more about the FJMC organization at the end of this podcast. Today's podcast will focus on two subjects which all men, whatever their age, should be aware of. Today's health episode is about the opioid epidemic, escalating marijuana use and abuse, and the healthcare provider, and was written by Dr. Gerald Aronoff, MD, Medical Director at Carolina Pain Associate in Charlotte, North Carolina, and a past president of the American Academy of Pain Medicine. It is being read by Dr. Paul Davidson, PhD, an active men's club and FGMC member, and medical physician specializing in gastrointestinal and general surgery and psychiatry at the Brigham and Women's Hospital, Boston, Massachusetts. And now, let's learn something which will help with our health.
The opioid epidemic. Escalating Marijuana Use and Abuse in the Healthcare Provider by Dr. Gerald Aronoff. In the last two decades, the U.S. has witnessed and participated in a crisis in which there are now more drug overdoses than any other type of accidental deaths. Although the media has fueled the public's response to this problem, what is presented to the public is inaccurate. That is, although the statistics generally call many of these overdose deaths opioid deaths, they are deaths related to multiple substances combined in overdose. Most commonly, this involves one or more opiates, alcohol, benzodiazepines such as alprazolam, clonazepam, diazepam, and other sedating drugs. The drug of choice for street drug abuse has been expanded. Although many individuals begin with experimenting with alcohol and marijuana as pre-adolescents and adolescents, over time, multiple opiates, heroin and cocaine, frequently become drugs of choice, either by oral use, IV use, or snorting. Many addicts are better educated about potential risks by witnessing friends and family deaths from overdoses or from sharing needles and developing AIDS. However, despite this, in many parts of the country, there are multiple deaths, initially said to be related to heroin, but often are heroin combined with an adulterated form of high-potency fentanyl, which often proves to be toxic and lethal. Many in the street-addicted population are aware of their options for treatment, but relatively few remain in treatment for adequate time to bring them into remission. We now know that the population of active addicts is not limited to one age group, race, socioeconomic group, or sex. For many of this population, the problem began in early life, either through unmet dependency needs, broken homes, parents who had substance use disorders, and a variety of other deprivations. Relatively few chose this dysfunctional lifestyle as their life stream. Another group, through medical illness or injury, developed health problems for which some healthcare providers began prescriptions of opioid analgesics, and unfortunately either continued to write the prescriptions for longer than necessary, or they failed to recognize when their patients were using the medications in a dysfunctional way consistent with substance misuse or abuse, leading to dependency and addiction. The healthcare providers may not have had adequate training in how to recognize and stratify patients at risk for a substance use disorder. Some of these individuals continued to obtain regular opioid or analgesic prescriptions even after their pain problem resolved, or at the very least, no longer required opiates. In retrospect, since I have reviewed many of these records, there's also a large group of patients who, in my opinion, never required treatment with opioid analgesics, even early in their treatment. There is adequate data from the various pain organizations, as well as the Substance Abuse and Mental Health Services Administration, Center for Substance Abuse Treatment, or SAMHSA, to indicate that prescription drug abuse has now overtaken street drug abuse as a major public health problem. As a pain medicine physician for more than 30 years, who is also board certified in substance abuse treatment, I find that dealing with the above populations is very difficult. When done in a comprehensive, coordinated, and individualized treatment approach, the results for bringing these patients into remission, having them replace maladaptive coping and dysfunctional lifestyle, with more adaptive coping skills and a functional lifestyle, has been gratifying and very successful. Many patients who had dropped out of school, were fired from jobs, who had a life of disability or unemployment, have learned to replace these with more productive lives, including work and or returning to school. Substance use disorders are major public health problems, and dealing with them involves more than treating the patient. We must put more of our resources into changing priorities in our healthcare system as it relates to substance use disorders and other mental health problems. In the last decade, I have found myself lecturing to medical students and training physicians, as well as more senior physicians, making them more aware of the magnitude of some of the above problems, but also helping them make decisions about another problem that complicates our pain management. That is, the patients who are legitimately taking medication for chronic pain, including appropriately monitored opioids, but who are also using marijuana and/or alcohol and/or other substance along with pain medication. Today's marijuana is much more powerful and addictive than it was a generation ago. The first step towards making marijuana more socially acceptable was the concept of medicinal marijuana. There were many states where marijuana was illegal. However, if a physician found that patients had medical problems that did not respond adequately to conventional treatments, such as medications for nausea or vomiting, or for chronic pain, and the healthcare providers could write letters saying that the patient was appropriate for use of Marinol or other forms of medical marijuana, and that it was medically necessary. In today's comments, I will not have the opportunity to discuss the benefits and risks of marijuana. As a general statement, I will say that there is a subgroup of patients who may be appropriate for use of this drug in the management of certain types of neuropathic pain, intractable nausea and vomiting at times associated with chemotherapy, or with other serious GI problems. However, I have had many of my substance dependence patients tell me that it was very easy for them to find a physician who could be manipulated into writing such a letter, allowing them to be found to be appropriate for the use of medical marijuana. There are now more than 25 states that have further made marijuana socially acceptable and now have legalized recreational marijuana. I have been opposed to this from the outset and believe that we already have started to see an increase in motor vehicle accidents related to the increased use of marijuana and other substances. I believe that we will see many more motor vehicle accidents, including pedestrian deaths related to these accidents, as we see groups of people traveling in a car with multiple stoned marijuana users who will be more easily distracted, have a shorter attention span, delayed reaction time, other mental status changes, many of which they will not recognize, leading to tragic accidents. Some of these marijuana-stoned individuals may also be prescribed or using street opiates. I have offered the opinion that this is a major accident waiting to happen. This crisis will evolve over time. I have lectured on this, and I have sent letters to some senior decision makers, such as city mayors and state governors, offering my services to assist in working with them in the hopes of preventing catastrophic consequences. So far, my recommendations have gone unheeded. Dr. Aronoff is medical director at Carolina Pain Associates in Pennsylvania. He is past president of the American Academy of Pain Medicine and has authored or edited 8 books on chronic pain. His latest book published is Medication Management of Chronic Pain, What You Need to Know. His website is GeraldAronoffBooks.com. For book orders, contact Gerald Aronoff, that's Aronoffmd, at PainExpert.com. Thank you.
Today's Wealth episode consists of 2 articles. The first is When Not to Buy a Stock and was written by Dr. Gary Smith, Doctor of Veterinary Medicine, Cincinnati, Ohio, an active Men's Club and FGMC member, and an active investor in both the tech and medical industries, both in the United States and Israel. The second article is a professional response to stock picking and stock timing, written by Brotherhood member Fred Taylor, a wealth coach in Marietta, Georgia. Both Wealth articles will be read by Robert Blitzer, also an active Men's Club and FGMC member, a non-practicing CPA, and account director for a software company in New Jersey.
When Not to Buy a Stock by Gary Smith. The other day, a good friend of mine told me he put in a bid for a stock named Amarincorp. He asked me what I thought. He was very excited about the stock because he read some great things about it and heard it was a hot stock. There was a study out by one company in Australia showing that fish oil diminishes the possibility of stroke. Amarin Corporation PLC is a biopharmaceutical company with operations in lipid science focused on the commercialization and development of therapeutics for cardiovascular health. The company operates through the development and commercialization of Vascepa segment. The company's lead product, Vascepa, icosapent ethyl capsules, is approved by the United States FDA for use as an adjunct to diet to reduce triglyceride levels in adult patients with severe hypertriglyceridemia. The indication for Vascepa, known as the MARINE indication, is based primarily on the results from the MARINE study of Vascepa in this approved patient population. The stock price went from $2.35 a share up to $22.75 per share. It was hot. Every day it was going up. People were almost panic buying. We will see this happen in the months ahead with many companies. People will not want to lose out on apparent large potential gains. The cocktail party effect is when people are so euphoric about making money on stocks, that is all they can talk about at parties. We are not there yet. Well, I researched the company for my friend. Here's what I found. One, insiders have been selling the company since it was at $10 to the tune of over 2 million shares. Two, analysts were all over the place. One said strong buy, one said strong sell. Other than that, others were saying sell or hold. Three, earnings were poor and erratic. Four, this was Amarin's only product. Five, earnings per share was minus 34 cents. Six, ROA was minus 52.90. Seven, return on investment capital was minus 1.42. And eight, institutions owned only 38% of the outstanding shares. I believe there was panic buying of this stock, and it artificially ran up on speculation and manipulation. Really, it was a disaster waiting to happen. This is very common. Further, I suggested if he heard about this company in a public setting or on TV or on news, that he was probably too late for the game. He canceled his order, and the next day, the stock went down to 15.47, or lost 42% before moving back up to $16 a share. The takeaway here is never to buy these kinds of stocks when someone recommends them. Most of the time, you are going to lose money and lose money fast. Do your due diligence and watch these stocks for a while before buying them. If you miss it, then there is always the chance to buy another stock. You rarely get rich from high-risk investments. You get rich from great companies that offer products that people need and pay a nice dividend. A professional response to stock picking and stock timing by FJMC member Fred Taylor. This article is in response to the article by Gary Smith in a previous issue of the Wealth Newsletter. Gary Smith's article is well-written, motivated, and interesting. That's the end of my positive comment. I will provide a very short response to Mr. Smith's article. If there was ever any reliable consistency to the, quote, technical tools Mr. Smith references, he and all of those who follow this philosophy of investing would be quite wealthy in very short order and have no need for any further investment considerations. The reality is that is not. If it were true, all and anyone following this methodology of investing would have to do is to go out and mortgage their house, all their property, and borrow as much as they could from any lender and put their chips down on this bet, market going up or market going down, for that is what it really is, not investment, but betting on an outcome. There are all sorts of technical tools used on an ongoing basis, as well as research into historical events in order to divine the future movements of the stock market. Decades of independent academic research has shown them to be essentially worthless. What Mr. Smith's research into this area is offered to accomplish for us is to provide some sort of rational way to time the market, for all this is just another market timing methodology. Since Mr. Smith references a couple of investment icons indirectly, Warren Buffett and John Bogle, both of whom I admire, let me provide some insight from them. First, Buffett does not ever attempt to market time. He finds what he likes and he buys it when available. Moreover, he has not been an investor in individual stocks for years. He leaves that to the investment committee of his insurance subsidiary. His advice, offered in numerous places, including his annual shareholder letters, is to simply buy index funds and leave it alone. This is not only offered to the public, but advice he has given to his heirs as to how they should invest when they inherit upon his passing. In terms of what he buys, as exhibited by his actions over the last many years, it is whole companies, both public and private, that fit in the Berkshire Hathaway family of companies. Individuals and most institutions cannot invest this way. Second, John Bogle's comment on market timing is more succinct. Quote, "I have never met anyone who was able to do it, nor have I ever met anyone who knew anyone who was able to do it. Market time. Simply, what causes market to go up or down is the input of all the global players participating in the market, processing all of the known information and acting upon it. What can change their market behavior is what is basically unknown, tomorrow's news and or any new inputs. This is the basic of the efficient market hypothesis, postulated by Nobel laureate Eugene Fama. The overall results over decades of professional money managers, investors, has pretty much proven him right. Res ipsa loquitur. This by Fred Taylor, a wealth coach in Marietta, Georgia.
This Health and Wealth podcast is presented by the Federation of Jewish Men's Club, a 90-year-old organization of the conservative Jewish movement, whose mission is to involve Jewish men in Jewish life. FJMC has approximately 200 affiliated clubs spread out throughout the United States, Canada, and around the world, including Israel. The organization's website at www.fjmc.org has a wealth of information regarding the organization and its programs. This podcast was engineered by Dr. David Edwards, PhD in biochemistry, who retired as Professor Emeritus from the University of Pittsburgh and an active FJMC member. Bruce Fagan did the cover art. If you have any questions, you can reach us by email at podcasts@fjmc.org. I'm Stephen Schrago, an active member of the Temple Israel of Sharon Mass Men's Club and FJMC member. Thank you for listening.